you for joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek filter. I'm Ms. Shannon, joined as usual by my friend and co-host, Mr. Jayton Satia. How are you, Jayton?
I'm great, and I love our theme song.
Thank you very much. I'm going to get to that, and we appreciate everybody joining us here as we are broadcasting, as usual, from the Twin Cities Film Fest studio. And what Jayton's talking about is that, you know what, sometimes as human beings, we enjoy making new friends, right? We go, new friends are great, and we want to meet new friends. But one of my recent new friends decided he was going to start listening to our podcast, which we appreciate. New listeners are great. If you're a listener, we appreciate all of your feedback to a point. Sometimes you don't want their feedback, especially if they're a new friend, because he said that he had been listening to the podcast. He thought I had a great voice. He thought Jayton had a great voice, but he hates our theme song.
Ugh.
Boo, right?
I don't hate it. No, I like it. I like it a lot. Remember when we were the other podcast, we tried like three or four of them.
Okay.
You know, and I think this is the best yet.
Okay.
So that being said, there's always something better. If an artist wants to come and actually create us a brand new theme song.
We would take that.
We would absolutely explore that. Yeah.
Okay. And the thing that is going to be interesting is that we are going to be wrapping up we have today's episode and then two more that will wrap up the final episodes of our inaugural season here on Be Our Geek, right?
It flew by.
Yeah, and so we're going to go through the end of December, and then we are going to kick off season two. We're going to kick off season two when we
try different accents when next year.
Oh, please don't. I've known you for years. You do not do accents
well. I barely do an Indian accent, and I'm Indian.
And you're Indian. I know. Oh, okay. So we're going to get to introducing our guest geek because she's known you for a number of years, too. So as everyone knows from List to Us, we do have our guest geek that comes in and talks to us about something that they find fascinating. And this week, we were very excited, and we're going to bring her in early. Normally, we'd bring her in at segment two, but because she is so fantastic, our guest geek this week, Stephanie Hansen.
Hello.
Blogger, photographer, podcaster, social commentator, everything amazing. And you can find her at stephaniesdish.com and also at her podcast, The Makers of Minnesota, which is fantastic. So thank you for joining us, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
This is why I wanted to bring you on ahead of time, because I'm about to maybe bag on Jayton for a couple of things.
Hey, hey.
But Stephanie, you are also, when we get into the second part of this episode, we're going to do a deep dive on something that, as long as Jayton and I have been doing this podcast, we have not talked about this subject, and it's going to come up as a surprise to a lot of people. You are our first Game of Thrones geek on
which
our
I
geek
find
podcast.
Like, how is that even possible?
I know. Well, part of it is I watched the first season of Game of Thrones and then tapped out. And Jayton, are you still actively watching
yes.
it? You're still actively
so
watching
I have not
it.
Haven't done the full dive of watching episodes like twice, because I know that's kind of a key thing is to get back into it. You should just go back and watch the season again to just get yourself
I think
caught up.
Be like
I haven't done
third.
That yet. So like,
you
I watch them as they come
now,
out, and if it's like
you?
A year and a half break between the last one and the next one, maybe almost 2 years, like I don't know if I'll go back and watch them. I'll just start binging, and I'll just kind of let my mind reflect back.
So it's a great time to do that. This like usually around the holidays, they'll do the marathons where
yes.
they'll air them all back to back. And like if you're wrapping presents or doing cookies or anything, because you don't have to have as much attention
because
you've already gone through
Fair
it
enough.
Once.
You got the basic gist of the characters.
This will
basic,
be my third yeah. time binging
third time
if I do it this season.
From scratch? From beginning?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Then I thought it was interesting that both of you, as avid Games of Thrones current viewers, that you were not familiar with one of my favorite web series on Funny or Die, which is called Gay of Thrones. And so Gay of Thrones, if you guys watch the new version of Queer Eye, and you remember Jonathan on there?
Yes.
Jonathan actually had a very successful web series called Gay of Thrones. And what he would do is that every episode, he would do a recap, like a 4 or 5 minute long recap. Where he
it's
would
like
be,
the Talking Dead.
Yes.
But like,
and so except that he would be in a salon. And he would have a different person come in and sit in the chair every week, and it would just be like, "Girl, did you watch Game of Thrones?" And Game of Thrones, and then he would go off, and it would sound
That's
like this.
That's funny.
This theme is epic.
Yeah,
I
totally.
I mean, honestly,
gives you chills just hearing it.
Oh, did you watch Game of Thrones last night?
I didn't know I was out, but I'm actually in that show.
Oh my god, is that you,
and this
Theon?
Is actually
it is me, Theon.
Oh my god, with this blonde, I didn't even recognize
no
you.
Way.
You like it? It's good hair.
I love.
Nice.
You missed the craziest episode this week.
And I'll play a little bit more.
Can you believe how stupid Caitlyn's brother was last night?
Edmure, yeah.
He missed three times. I felt so bad for him. But then the uncle got up and was all like, get out the way. I got this. And he was all like, this is how we do it.
Now, so I would suggest to everybody, see, you guys are laughing now. You don't have the visual. You haven't seen it before. But this is how I continued to keep track of Game of Thrones.
In the 5-minute recap.
Exactly. And I would, because the reason why I tapped out, and Jayden has heard this story, Stephanie, is that I decided that Game of Thrones was no longer entertaining to me. It's like emotionally abusive. And it made me sad every week. So I stopped watching
it. I can hear that.
Right. And so I just kind of was like, the violence is too graphic. This isn't really fun. I really got into so many of my particular geek fandoms because I liked the escapism of wanting to go to Narnia or go down through a looking glass. I have no desire to go to Westeros. Nothing good happens to anybody that goes to Westeros.
So I'm assuming you don't watch then The Walking Dead either.
I don't watch The Walking Dead either. Exactly.
Which
for
I
the
also
same
love.
Reason.
And also I watched Walking Dead. I'm caught up on that.
Yep. Those two things. And people are always shocked that I don't watch that. The other thing that I am very passive about is watching The Handmaid's Tale. And
that's I'm just binge watching that right now.
And I think that all of these fandoms and all of these shows are very worthy shows. And I appreciate having people like you two that can come and tell me about them and being able to watch things like Game of Thrones, because I want to know, but I don't want to. Like, I would watch the recaps that they would do on Game of Thrones, and that's how I would decide what episodes I could watch, like through my fingers, like passively later, and keep track of all of the people.
What makes
these
you
recaps.
Squeamish, right? That's one of the things, because my wife started watching the Game of Thrones with me, like, you know, when it first came out, and after the first literally two episodes, she was like, this is just too much violence, too much, like, I can't just take it in. And I've been watching it, and I watch all those other Walking Dead, and she continues to come to me. She was like, you're just desensitized to this, aren't you? You're just like, this is gross. This is head chopped off. Like, that's not normal. I'm like, of course it's not. It's, I live in fantasy. This is what I'm, you know, again, getting away from
that's
my own.
It, is that
I can compartmentalize one versus the other.
And I can in a lot of particular fandoms. Like, there may be violence in other ones. But when you watch Game of Thrones and you watch Walking Dead, I feel like they have used the technology that we have now to make the graphic violence so realistic that it is not fantasy to me anymore. I'm like, that's what torture looks like. And it's very difficult for me to distance that these aren't actual. Maybe, you know, I'm too empathetic in nature. So I'm like, because I am one of those people that I feel bad for fictional characters all the time. But when I watch The Walking Dead and when I watch Game of Thrones, I'm all like, I feel like that's the part that turns me off about it. I'm just like, this is it's absolutely no emotional joy to me. It's only dire.
Well, if you put in the context of history, you could actually relate it back to what was being done to just from humans to humans, and they're kind of reflecting that in
that
the shows.
That is also a worthy thing to acknowledge, that this is what terror looks like. This is what, you know, torture looks
White
like.
It is the White
House, right,
after
all. Exactly. And I'm like,
Trump is Cersei Lannister, and all his cabinet are on various houses and families. And
I do get all of the juxtapositions as well, and I think that that's part of what turned me off about the show as well, as far as if you only have so much time to commit to particular fandoms, how do you choose what you're going to do? Because our, you know, if anything is a finite resource, it's your personal time, right?
Time.
So for me, going, okay, well, what am I going to do with what counts as my free time? Game of Thrones was no longer fun. And so I'm just like, I'm at a point in my life where I want things that I can at least have some sort of joy out of it. Like, everybody you like in Game of Thrones eventually dies. So we can get more into all of these things. And I'm glad you guys can keep me up on it. But it is just, it was, I found myself not looking forward to watching the next episode as much as I am one of those people that desperately wants a dragon and wants to do other. I'm like, I don't want that dragon, though. You know, if I got to go that way to get that dragon, I don't want a dragon.
Stephanie, are you ready for the, because last season's coming up next year, April?
Yeah,
I believe.
April.
Mm-hmm.
Season 8.
HBO announced that.
6 episodes only.
Yeah, but I think each of them going to be like over
full-length
an hour.
Movies.
Right.
Yeah.
They're all going
to
be. Yeah.
So are you ready for the to put a closure on it?
No.
You're not?
No. I want there to be more, but I also really respect the idea of when you think you can go out on a high note and not ruin it too, because I think Walking Dead has gone on too long, And
yeah, I would say two seasons too long.
Yeah, and I know that they're following like this comic book arc, and mm-hmm. so that's. But I feel like maybe what could have happened is they could have closed out sort of one season of it, and then maybe given it some time or come back with a different iteration.
Yeah, like maybe 10 years later or something. And
yeah.
Then just give it enough passing of time and real life as well as just fictional life as well. And, then
and
come
The
back
Walking
to it.
Dead's weird because it has like these high points and then it kind of drones on and it just,
right.
and then it'll start to arc again. So it's strange to me that I'm still watching that. And
I watch it too, yeah.
Some I've missed,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like that I'm still hanging in there with that show is kind of miraculous too. Because they make the payoff enough each season that I keep coming back.
And a key part of Game of Thrones is that you have no idea which character will not be in the next episode. Right?
And they tend to kill off fan favorites.
Right.
So it's very jarring.
So
yes.
as a consumer of a show that you really like or at least want to have continue going, you now expect that? Are you looking forward to, hey, one of my favorites might just die?
No,
this episode, or?
It's funny that you talk about that this gives you like angst watching it.
Yes.
I'm like the reverse. Like the world gives me so much angst, and the people in our real life world and the culture and economy and the politics and the racism, sexism, all the isms.
Right.
That I actually look to these shows as like a form of escape from all of that, because I feel like in some respects what's happening in the real world is so... Like, graphic violence on TV is nothing compared to some of the stuff that we're seeing in real life.
And I right. do agree with you, and I think that that's why when we have our personal definitions of what's escapism, you know, for me, I'm all like, okay, well, let's push even farther, because maybe my brain still equates it to a little too close to what is real life, so it doesn't feel escapist to me
yeah,
at all when
I
watch it. And so I think that's really the only differentiating factor, because I'm like, I know that this is supposed to be fictional, but it makes me feel the same way as these things that are happening in real life make me feel. So I didn't feel like it, that's why I use the word is it was no longer entertaining
yeah.
to me. I didn't feel entertained when I watched it. I felt like the same thing all the time.
It's funny that you put The Handmaid's Tale too mm-hmm. in this sort of trilogy of misery.
Yes.
Because I just.
And I have not started that. So I'm looking forward to starting that.
That was an incredible book
right.
that I read like in, you know, high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't thought about it in a long time. And watching, I just started watching that. I'm in season two, like episode three.
Right.
That is really a well done series.
It is.
And the acting is incredible.
I haven't made it to season two for the same reason, because it is an emotional journey. And so I think that, you know, certain people just need to be in a certain place in their life. And I'm like, I'm going to go watch some anime. You know, kind of thing. Like what I do in my spare time, I watch a bunch of shows. I'm like, I'm going to go watch Seven Deadly Sins.
Have you guys seen the video of Melania and her unveiling of the White House Christmas decorations this year?
No, not
No,
yet.
I know what they look like.
They're like
red.
Very red and very...
Like blood red.
Yes. And
like
very
red wedding red?
Like
no, yeah.
Like red wedding red, or like The Handmaid's Tale red. Like very dystopian, very stark and... bold and just kind of scary
well,
looking.
I think one of the comedians made as they were just late night shows, they were just kind of making fun of the colors of the of that tree. They were like, somebody skinned the actual Christmas tree and that's what it looks like on the inside.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, I am glad that you are here, Stephanie. I'm glad that you are here, Jayden. We're going to take our break, and when we come back, we're going to go deeper into Game of Thrones. But since Stephanie's here, we also would be completely remiss if we didn't take a few minutes to talk about food. So we'll be right back here on Be Our Geek. And welcome back to Be Our Geek, again broadcasting from the Twin Cities Film Fest studios. I'm Ms. Shannon. Jayden Satia is here, and our guest geek this week, we introduced her to you earlier. She is a food blogger, photographer, podcaster, all things amazing, Stephanie Hansen. Stephanie, I am very happy that you are here to talk to us about Game of Thrones, because we hadn't gotten around to talk about it. And just to give people a little taste test of some things that are coming up and some future episodes of Be Our Geek, we have some more geeks like Stephanie where they're going to talk about some things we hadn't covered. That you might be surprised. So in a couple of weeks, we're actually going to have our friend Marley Bigelow on to talk about The Bachelor, which I think I've seen some of. Stephanie, you've seen some of that. Yeah, and I think Jayden hasn't seen any of it. So this is going to be quite...
Just like commercials.
Yeah, so this is going to be fascinating. And that's what I always think is fun, is watching somebody else get incredibly excited about whatever their particular geekdom is.
Right.
And so I like talking to you as well, because not only do you know this about Game of Thrones, you've been watching it since the beginning, but the fact that you do have this wealth of knowledge and information. But if I ever have a specific question about food, you can do all of this as well. So when you were starting like Stephanie's Dish and deciding that that was going to be one of the worlds that you and the spaces that you lived in, why did you decide to do that?
You know, it came out of being fired.
Okay.
So, sort of fired. Mm-hmm. So, I started working at MyTalk 107.1 as sort of an entertainment reporter.
Right.
And I would do entertainment reports for Lori and Julia's show. And I worked at City Pages at the time. And then they thought, well, hey, Lori and Julia have been so successful over there. Maybe we'll get another show like that. So I got a full-time show with a gal named Meredith, and after a year and a half, they decided that they were going to let her go.
Okay.
And I went into the big man's office, and my partner's been fired, and I was like, oh, so am I getting fired? Like, it was very just, I don't know if you've ever been in a radio station or anytime you get fired, it's awful feeling.
It is. And a lot of times it's a big shock. Like you walk in, you thought you were doing well, and then you notice a couple of like big wigs who aren't normally around. And then you're like, oh, wait, are they here for me?
And it's not even really like personal most of the time. It's like, oh, well, your ratings just weren't doing what it needed to do, or we're going to change format or whatever.
Every time I've ever gotten fired in radio, I've never been fired for a personal reason. I've been fired because they made a budget cut.
Totally.
I've been fired, you know, we put on a syndicated show. Like, it was never that, oh, we think you suck. It was.
But you still feel fired.
Right. Because you still are, and you have no job.
Yeah. And so they were like, well, we're going to hire Jason Matheson from Fox, and he's going to do the morning show. And I was like, okay. And he didn't want to have a partner, so we really don't have a place for you. It's like, okay. So I said, you know, well, am I fired? And they said, no, but like, what else would you want to do?
Right.
And I, at the time, like the Food Network had started and I was a good home cook and I was sort of feeling obsessed with food. So I just said, well, how about a food show?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, great, sure. Yeah. Who would you want as your radio partner? And I had been on the air for 10 minutes with Stephanie March, who at the time worked for a magazine called The Rake. And I just got really good vibes from her. We weren't friends. We didn't know each other. And I just said, well, I know this woman. Her name's Stephanie March. I can give her a call. And they were like, yeah, why don't you do that and let us know what she says.
And Stephanie's now, she's the food editor at Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine now. For
and
everybody out there.
That was 11 years ago. So every Saturday from 9 to, it started out, our show was 1 to 2, and then they moved us to 2 hours and moved it up to 9 to 11. And, you know, food in this town and just food in general has become more of entertainment, more pop culture, more lifestyle. And so we rode that wave, and it's been really a blast. I'm by no means an expert. The way that the show has sort of shaken out is she's the expert and I'm the eater.
Right.
And she's the expert simply because she's the reporter and that's like her job to do the fact checking.
Can I pause you for a second?
Sure.
I know that you just said that you're not the expert, but I think being a food geek and being a, because I listen to the show and you are an expert in this, you know, and really do a great job of researching what are the fun and amazing storylines that go on surrounding food here in the Twin Cities?
There are a lot. It's more than just like the chef culture of the Twin Cities, because that's certainly one aspect. But what really gets me jazzed is the people in that culture, their stories.
Right.
So my particular podcast is Makers of Minnesota, and that is not only food, but a lot of it is food because that's kind of the world I'm in. We talk to people that are making things, whether it's literal products or services or ideas or technology.
Right.
And that's, I love that entrepreneur story. I love to hear how people got started and what they do and how they made money in it, how much they invested, what the pitfalls were that happened to them. you know, I had a business myself kind of all the way along while I was building the Weekly Dish radio show. And, you know, we almost got divorced over it. My husband and I were business partners with a lot of personal drama.
Right.
A lot of personal success. But, oh my gosh, like our marriage was the Game of Thrones for a while because of that business.
Right.
So having come out the other side of that, sold the business, had a good result. And still all the way along, I've had this radio show. Stephanie has gotten, she was divorced from the time that we had the radio show. She had a small child. My daughter went off and went to college. We've had a lot of lifestyle changes too. So it's just fun. Food is a million things.
Right.
It's people's stories. It's connections. It's family. It's technology. It's how you do your leisure time. It's really everything.
And
for
me, you know, I really applaud what you do because I mean, I'm one of those people that when I'm doing my Netflix binges, those are a lot of the shows that I gravitate towards, or, you know, those,
yeah,
you know, watching The Chef's Table where they have all these storylines about these different chefs from all these different regions, or, you know, even like all of the reality shows. I know that we, you know, if you guys had seen like my, you know, it's so garbagey. The Final Table, the most recent reality show, Netflix.
It just started and I haven't watched it yet, but I heard it's good.
Right? Yeah. International.
I watched it, so I don't want to spoil it all for you guys. I watched The Final Table. It was not my favorite cooking reality show. Part of it is fun, but it's so dramatic. Like they're like, dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Like they make it so like the production of it, not the people who are competing on it. They're all really cool, but the production of the way that they do The Final Table, it was way too many like spotlights.
Well, you got to have a little bit of
too much
tension, a little bit of tension.
But I don't know if you do, because that's part of the reason why I like Great British Baking Show.
I just started watching that.
It's just joyous.
Actually, we watched that yesterday with my four-year-old.
Yeah,
right?
And that show, I mean, there's tension in that you want them to all succeed, and you know everyone can't be the winner, but it's not made to, you know, it's not created in a way that you're all like, this is, who's going to cut somebody's throat next? You know?
That show, to me, because it's what, like 8 seasons, and mm-hmm. I'm just starting to watch it, that show to me is incredibly popular because it's very different.
Yes.
It is about celebrating the people individually, and even if they're not the best, and even that's really a unique style.
Right.
It's a wide spectrum of who participates. There are these, you know, home bakers and
they're
people
all the good guys.
Right. Yes.
Like usually in a reality arc.
You care about the grandma as much as you care about
the
hippie.
Or the 19-year-old young one.
Or
you know,
the vicar's wife.
The vicar, yes. And
I love the vicar's wife.
Right. And they talk about the sponge. They talk, and I'm like, I want to know how to make the sponge.
The two hosts are great too.
Yes.
They work really well together. I think that's a good thing about
our
show.
Because I'm watching Mary Berry and is it Paul with
yeah,
the blue,
Paul Hollywood.
Pretty blue
yeah.
eyes?
Yeah, those are the first, those are the initial series. And so they do have, you'll see now, you can watch the first 5 seasons. And then if you see now when you're on Netflix, you see Great British Baking Show Beginnings. Those have the original hosts, those two ladies, who I think are fantastic. You know, I think they're, you know, so Sue and Mel. But in the new ones, they move, so in the drama in that particular show, they change networks, you know, because they change networks. And so when they change networks, Sue, Mel, and Mary Berry all dropped off the show. So in the two brand new episodes that they have two brand new hosts.
Got it.
And Paul Hollywood, and in a different female judge, this lady named Prue, who's a little snarky for me. So they managed to make Paul Hollywood in the Great British Baking Show.
He's the good guy?
He's the good guy now.
Because you have to have the dick and the deer in every episode.
And so now he's almost the deer because Prue's a little harsher. And so you're like, yeah, suck your teeth, because that's how I feel about it. I'm like, it just doesn't have the same charm. Like, you could tell that they told him to be nicer so that he would come across as the
deer. I learned things from that show, too, right? Again, at heart, I just love to cook. That's kind of my, like, I'll go work out, and I'll go, like, into the kitchen, and I'm the cook in the family. And I love that. Like, so my son, who's 4, like, he knows how to cut vegetables now. He cut all by himself, like, just, you know, with little supervision. But he and I watch those tasty videos on Facebook, which are my time suck, because you can't. I just have
you
to.
You just they go one right after another.
Right. And then you try to research, like, I wonder if they have something on, like, because they're concentrated 2 minutes, and you can get the entire recipe in, like, 2 minutes.
Right.
I think those recipes are really family friendly, too.
Right.
Yes.
Because they're quick. They're easy. They're not super precious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they're not
above. You can mess it up and it's still
rolling hamburgers in, you know, dough and frying the ball.
Doesn't feel pretentious.
No.
Like anybody can do it.
They have a good new cookbook out for Christmas season.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I think that also, you know, I remember when I read Michael Pollan's last book, Cooked, which is a Netflix series now, too. And I like the concept because all of the, you know, everybody in my family, we still cook. But people look at us just odd that we're home cooks. Because that is something that has kind of gone away. And like the fact that, you know, you're not always making these amazing, you know, everything I make is clearly not Instagrammable. But it's not going to get grammed. But the fact that we still do it and being able to share that with your family and the way that he talks about it kind of from an anthropological standpoint, I find interesting. And that's why I think it's fantastic what you do on the Makers podcast and what you've done, you know, on your blog for years is showcasing the story aspect of all these things and why it is still important that we as human beings have these particular interactions and why food has a place in that particular storyline, Stephanie.
Here's my trend for next year, because I'm starting to think about, we're at the end of the year, I'm starting to think about trends in food, and we usually do a kind of a prediction episode. When you look at like these boxes, like Local Crate or Blue Apron,
yes,
these boxes started out as being sort of like quick ways to teach people to provide better nutritious options for their families. What they've become is more like date night boxes.
Yes.
So a lot of them are a lot of millennials and people that aren't necessarily home cooks are purchasing these boxes, and then that's the big Friday night at home. So I feel like cooking is becoming more entertainment again and lifestyle driven than nutritious or satisfying like your basic needs. And that basic needs are getting satisfied by pre-made things at the supermarket or grab-and-go items. But when you really think about cooking and thinking about it in your home, that it's getting a entertainment lifestyle aspect to it.
Right. So were you, because I know that I've seen you, like when you're doing one of the TV shows or one of your segments in town, you can give some good suggestions on basically how to do a good theme party or put things mm-hmm. together. Have you done like something where it's like maybe a theme party based upon your particular fandom, like a Game of Thrones style theme
no,
party?
No, but it's very aspirational to think about that. Wow. Can you imagine?
What
like,
would you serve?
Game.
Like, seriously.
You'd serve like
just
pheasant.
Pigeon?
Or
wine.
Wine.
Ale. Lots of wine.
Okay.
Stewed fruits.
Yeah. Okay.
Like just kind of like, and maybe this is why Game of Thrones appeals to me too. My mom was big into the royals.
Yes.
And sure. just the royal history. And so just, you know, and some of my favorite Game of Thrones scenes, actually the royal wedding mm-hmm. was one of my favorite scenes. Not the royal wedding, the Red Wedding.
The yep. Red Wedding. Mm-hmm.
Not only because of the way it happened and it was so brutal at the end and pivoting of the whole series, right. but I loved looking at the ostentatiousness of the food.
Okay. God, yes, right. It was just, I mean, it was... There was gluttony. You could
it
just
was opulent.
It
just
was,
like
you could just see yeah. it, and people were enjoying it and having a great time. And that's to your point of like food bringing people together, even if they're from different worlds.
Right.
But that's the one thing they can agree on. Like this tastes good. This
yep.
satisfies me. This meets my need. And then what happens afterwards? But like in that moment, everybody felt like they were part of something.
And it was communal. It was like a celebration. Food is just.
And it goes the other way too, right? It could also be as part of like, you know, when we have a funeral and then everybody goes back to the house of
right.
the person.
Do so you know what I'm doing for my funeral? Because I've already totally planned this out. No. My family laughs, but I had a cancer scare about 8 years ago. And I started thinking about like, wow, if I died, like what would that look like? Because so many funerals you go to are kind of sad and impersonal. And
right.
our great grandma had died and we went to her funeral. She was 106. And as we're sitting in front of the country church, greeting people as they're coming in, this woman kind of comes peeling around the corner in this weird old Buick. And she looks like she's going to drive the car right into the church. But right before she starts to like head towards the church, she makes this weird right-handed erratic jerk of the wheel and ends up in the ditch,
oh, goodness.
Nose down. And so the car is like teetering, right? It's balancing on this huge berm because she's gone face first
oh,
into the
goodness.
Ditch.
Yeah.
And we all like run over there And my husband opens the door of the car, and he's kind of, it's very strange how he's having to open the door. And there's this woman in there, sure. Mary. And she was like, oh, I got so flustered. My salad is in the trunk. Can you get my salad? God. Because you bring something to the sure. potluck at yes. these funerals. She was like very concerned about the salad in her trunk, a lot less concerned about her car being in the ditch
or her safety.
And she walked, like, we get her salad out of the trunk and she goes into the church. We have the service. And in the meantime, a couple of farm guys, because we was in a small town, yep, came and pulled her car out. Yep. And I just was like, wow, this is what at my funeral, I want to have it like in a public park or somewhere outside. And I want everybody to bring their favorite, like, potluck. You know sure, how your family right. has Absolutely. A potluck dish? What's Absolutely. Your, do you have, like, a dish you always bring somewhere?
My mom does. My mom's, I was born in India, so my mom's a huge cook. And every time
Please
she comes
Please have me
over.
It's one of my favorite cuisines. Well,
and they used to own an Indian restaurant, and they've sold it since then. They've both retired, but my mom loves to cook, right, as part of that love. And
yeah.
So every time she comes over to watch the kiddo, which is pretty much every other day, she brings, like, 5 or 6 containers of things that she just made because, you know, cause she's retired and she just wants to yeah. make things. And there's traditional rice stuff. There's Yum. Rice pilaf, that whole thing. Yeah.
See,
so
in my,
those are simple things to bring to a potluck, I suppose.
Since I grew up in Arizona, my whole thing is it's enchilada. I call it, now that I'm here in Minnesota, it's hot dish. It's enchilada hot dish.
Yeah.
Is what I take
green
every time.
Sauce.
Mm-hmm. So I make that all the time. I used to call it a casserole. But I'm like, you can't call things casseroles here.
No.
So I make, you know, and I think it is just something that you kind of go, well, what's your go-to thing? What do you take all the time, Stephanie?
Or
do
See, you that's what's sad. I just asked my daughter the other day, like, hey, what is, and she's 20. I said, what would be, like, you think is my signature dish that when you're not at home, you're like, oh, I want my mom's blank. And she looked at me, she said, Mom, you never cooked the same thing twice.
Oh, wow.
She goes, like, I like all the stuff you cooked.
That's a cool thing, though.
But I said, so what are your, like, favorite childhood recipes? She's like, Dad's ribs, Dad's pizza, Dad's this, Dad's that, something, Dolores's lamb. Like, I didn't have
a thing. Right.
And I was so sad.
Mm-hmm.
I have, like, a cake. I have some cookie things. But I didn't have, like, a signature dish because I was always trying new stuff when she was little. And I just always liked cooking so much. I never really wanted
Mom's
to eat
everything.
The same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Mom's everything.
Mom's everything. And now, and I used, my family would make fun of me because I always put things in mason jars.
Sure.
But now that's very popular.
I was long before the trend. They call me, there's a name for it, you're Jorder, if you're a jar hoarder. And I'll put, like, soup. I have a freezer full of jars of things. So
okay.
It's
people use
fats,
don't
it's broths.
Don't
it's,
use freezer appropriately. I think my mom does the same thing. So my sister who lives in New York comes, you know, she's going to come next week or so. But she comes every other month or something. And when she comes over, my mom's freezer is filled with stuff in plastic containers or glass containers,
yep.
That then goes into a carry-on bag with my sister back to New York. It's only a 4-hour flight, so it's not going to unfreeze.
Right.
And you can bring food, you know, on domestic flights. And then my sister will put it into the freezer and then throughout the next 2 months, thaw and cook.
Oh, yeah. That's great. My daughter actually moved out on her own. And when she comes out, should we have Sunday dinner still?
Right.
Either my mother-in-law cooks it or I cook it. And she comes over for Sunday dinner and goes home with 6 jars of something. You know, usually it's soups just because that's easy and I have an Instant Pot and I make a lot of soup. But it's sort of my way of caring for her throughout the week. Like her feeling like loved and
right.
taken care of. And I don't live with her anymore and she's at college. But I know that she's always got a meal if she decides to. And when she was little, in high school, her friends loved to come to my house because we had meals in the freezer.
Maybe you should ask the high school friends what Stephanie's.
What's their favorite?
Yeah, and I mean, I really could because she'd get so mad. She's like, Mom, we never have like snacks. I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, what do you want me to buy? Well, you just have like, you know, most people have like chips and, you know, dips. And she's like, and you have chili. And like, you know, and you have like a macaroni, I'll have macaroni and cheese frozen in like bricks.
Sure.
I don't do Stouffer's. I make my own.
Right.
She's like, you just have meals. I would just want snacks. you know, you never want what
kale
you're,
chips.
It is funny. Yeah. I think that
kale chips are the worst.
Oh, I don't like kale chips either. But I mean, I think it is interesting when, you know, we're sitting here going, that's probably awesome. But it's interesting that you brought that up because, your kids never care. You know, kind of thing. Like, people go, well, doesn't your son love that you're into these videos and these movies and stuff? And I'm like, he does not care. It's not his fandom. Nope. He doesn't care that I'm into, like, comic books and superheroes. He cares about trains.
That's right.
So it just feels like they like bits and pieces of who you are. And we, you know, each generation tries to, like, have their little things that I'm like, I remember doing this with my mom or I remember doing this with my dad. But it still is a matter of that no matter how cool you are as a parent, your kids still don't think you're cool.
No, but they take it to heart because mm-hmm. My daughter, we went over there for happy hour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, we're coming over for happy hour. She invited us. I don't know what happy hour means with your kid.
Right.
We get there and she's got a cheese board. And it's fancy. Like, she's Ooh. Got this Norwegian caramel-colored cheese that's a dessert cheese, which I did not like. But I thought, whoa, okay. She had this other Bent River camembert that's a seasonal cheese that's really hard to find. It's a local cheese. It's so delicious. It has, like, a birch bark rind on it. And then she had these big globe grapes and these special rice crackers. And she clearly – I took a picture of it. And she was like, are you going to put that on your Instagram? So she cares now, and she's starting to care.
Right. So you just have to like lay the groundwork.
Foundation.
Yeah. Okay.
As a foodie, and as the holiday season upon us, if you could recommend a tool to be used in the kitchen that you use quite often, or a tool that you think is underutilized in most kitchens if they have it, what would that one or two tools?
Okay, I have two.
Okay.
One is a gadget, which is the microplane zester.
What is that?
What?
Microplane zester. What am I zesting, Stephanie?
Do you ever go and get pedicures?
Yes.
And the ladies at the pedicure place will pull out the grater.
Yes.
And
which
do
I
it on
you're
your.
Not supposed
you're
to
not
do
supposed
anymore.
To.
Yeah,
but
you're not supposed to.
That's
do that
what
anymore.
This is. Okay. So you have this. It's called a microplane zester, and you use it for things like garlic.
Yes.
Instead of chopping garlic, you just zest it along this rasp.
So it looks like a grater, but
that's
it's,
right.
Okay, so I have one of those. I didn't know that's what it's called.
But it's a specific.
I just call
is it. Is it designed a specific way? Or
there's a couple of them. Like
Mine
some are
like
long and thin.
It looks
others are
like
paddles.
It looks like a paddle, but it has all of the serrations on it. Like if you have,
I use
a
that
cheese
one
grater.
Specifically for cheese.
Okay,
because it's a little bit bigger. But they have one that's long and thin. That I use for lemon zest.
Sure.
Because I think you should put lemon zest in everything. Yep. Also for garlic, also for, I keep my ginger in the freezer and I use it for that.
Okay.
You could just like nuts, nutmeg. Honestly, I use it for so many things, a little onion in something that I don't want the chunks. I just want the essence and the oils.
That's great.
Okay. Yeah.
Microplane zester.
The second thing is an Instant Pot.
Oh, really? So
I'm crazy about my Instant Pot.
Now, is Instant Pot, is that a particular brand or is it an item? Is that like Kleenex or tissue? Like what
is it?
It is
Kleenex.
Okay.
It is a brand name item. It is called the Instant Pot. What it is a pressure cooker.
Okay.
With slow cooker built in. So it's rice cooker, slow cooker, egg cooker, and Instant Pot pressure cooker.
Okay.
And I got this kind of on a lark because we were going to do a show segment about it. I probably use it 3 times a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, it does look like when you watch all the videos online that it does do, as you said, a little bit of everything.
It does.
So, okay.
And I'm a big slow cooker too. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was like, well, there's no way I'm ever going to replace my slow cooker. People, I could get rid of my slow cooker. And that shocks me.
Because this does the work of slow cooker.
Yeah.
As well.
And I love to cook beans.
Sure.
Yes. I'm terrible at cooking rice. So
chili would be great in that.
It's amazing.
Right.
And just like the way it braises cuts of meat, I use it to make chicken wings. You can make like super great honey sticky soy wings and then you broil them to get them kind of crispy.
Well, so okay. I have a tool that my mom uses is the air fryer.
Okay. I'm against the air fryer.
Okay,
I'll tell
you
why.
Let's talk about that.
Okay. I'm not a big person for fried freezer food that then I reheat with the air fryer. That's what it's great for.
Okay.
So if you're wanting to have like delicious chicken nuggets out of the freezer or pizza, those kinds of things, it's great. I'm not that person. If I'm going to get something out of the I'm probably going to fry it myself. I'm just not a fried food person.
You couldn't air fry like Brussels sprouts or...
You can, but I wouldn't. I would just roast them. Yeah. I have a convection oven that works killer. So I know that people love that air fryer. It's just not going to be for me.
I've seen more advertisements for it lately than I have.
It's because it's the holiday season. Sure that and the Instant Pot are like the number two selling gadgets on Amazon.
I've never had a pressure cooker or anything, but then I did watch, back to our conversation about watching these reality shows, I did watch The Final Table, and they use a pressure cooker a lot in that whole thing because they only have an hour. And I'm like, oh, that's what a pressure cooker does? So I didn't even know what it really had done because we never had
one. It's used a lot in India. Like when every kitchen has a pressure cooker that's on the stove. And it's just, that's the way they make rice. That's the way they make pretty much everything.
And like I like to make my own chickpeas from dried or beans from dried. You know, you can make from dry chickpea meal in 30 minutes.
That's a skill, though.
Yes.
It's hard. I've tried just going from dry and just nope.
Because you don't have a pressure cooker.
Fair enough.
If you soak the beans overnight you cook them on the stovetop the next day, honestly, I'm still 5 hours later and those things are hard as rocks.
Yep.
So the pressure cooker changes
all
that.
Takes care of that.
Yeah. Okay. And I will say the Instant Pot isn't as instant as people want it to be.
Okay.
Some things are instant. Like you can do hard-boiled eggs in 4 minutes, but you could also do hard-boiled eggs on the stove with 10 minutes
12.
Of...
Yeah.
But they're better in the Instant Pot. They peel easier. They're always 100% consistent.
Okay.
If you make deviled eggs, like, you have to get this. If you make deviled eggs more than 3 times a year.
See, now I'm glad to have that because let's say, we just said those two items. Let's say I have a smallish kitchen, which I do, but I still want to cook. So I don't want to buy one of everything.
Sure.
Because I just don't have the counter. Like, that's part of the reason why I never use my slow cooker anymore, because it just got to be a pain. I'm like, I don't really have room. I have to leave it out. That's why I got rid of the blender that I had and put it away. I just slowly over time would stop using things because to efficiently use my particular space, I'd have to put it away after I was done with it, so I just got too lazy to get it back out.
Well, my Instant Pot has a gigantic dent in it because I, in my kitchen, built a bench seat that I have. And I'm not a big appliance person. Mm-hmm. I have a Vitamix. I have a slow cooker. I have the Instant Pot. I have a popcorn maker. But I don't have, like, a lot of stuff. But I didn't have a place to put it because I moved into a smaller place, so I built a bench seat. And somehow it got put in the bench seat, but not 100% right. So then someone came along and sat on the bench seat. So my Instant Pot has like this giant dent in it. I don't even know like if it's still safe to use, but I do.
But you're still using it?
Yeah, of course.
It hasn't exploded.
Not in my face, but.
But Stephanie, I think that that's the charm of it too, is that, you know, we went back to, you know, you called yourself not an expert, but then it was like, but compared to the amount of people that average American and the statistics that came about how they just don't cook anymore. The fact that you cook on such a regular basis to the point that your children are like, that your daughter's like, I don't have snacks.
Yeah.
And that they don't appreciate it. That part, I think, is fascinating, and that you have goals on learning to do additional items and other things that you want to do. So
I eat out a lot because of the show and for convenience, just like everybody else. I mean, honestly, if you saw my Visa bill, I don't buy entertainment. I don't shop. I eat and I travel.
Right.
And my Visa bill is and I drink, which is also part of the eating, and that's reflected in the bill.
Right.
But I like to cook. I wish I cooked more. Like, I just, you know, I wish I did more. It's good. I like controlling. I'm always a little bit heavy because I eat out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I exercise like crazy, but I'm always still a little bit heavy. Right. So I like to, when I eat at home, I like to control what I'm putting in my food.
Right.
Because when you go out to eat, I saw a recipe the other day. I mean, there was a stick of butter in the meal.
Right.
And I love butter and bring it on. But I was like, wow, there's so much hidden in these foods that, of course, it makes it taste good. It was a recipe that I did from a chef, and it was risotto, and there was a stick of butter in the risotto that served 3 people.
And I do think that's interesting. Like, I remember my younger sister and her husband, they're the official chefs in town. They've worked at different restaurants here in the Twin Cities. And she and I decided that we were going to, because our grandmother, she was a good cook, but she was very secretive and weird about it. So she didn't give us a cookbook or anything. She didn't write all her recipes down.
Moms,
and we got
do
them.
That.
Yeah, and so I agree.
Do it today.
Yeah, and so she just didn't do that. So we wanted our tamales to taste like grandma's tamales. So we were slowly trying to back into this recipe.
And then you found the lard.
And then we found the exactly. We're like,
you're
we
like,
found
oh.
lard and salt. Yep. Those are the two things. When we by the time we got back to the point where we're like, oh, it took this much actual lard and this much salt. We're like, we made them once, and we went back to our recipe because we're like, we just could not, just not emotionally right. justify doing it anymore.
The lard isn't as bad for you as people think.
I know, in theory, like having bits and pieces of those fats and having that, you yeah. know, things. I am all about balance and using those kind of things. I get it. But there are some things that, honestly, my grandma had diabetes and high blood pressure for a reason. I really am all like, you had sugar and everything. She was one of those persons. Like, she put salt on melon to make exactly. it taste sweeter. Like, I understand that.
If you're going to use that in one recipe, you are most likely going to use that same amount and or that.
In
you know,
everything.
It becomes a go-to condiment almost to, mm-hmm. to use in a lot of other recipes. So, yeah. So, I'm assuming.
I'm going to blow your mind here, too, about something.
What?
Because I firmly believe that most of, I mean, obesity is obesity.
Right.
But I firmly believe that a lot of health conditions like a diabetes, like high cholesterol, like heart disease are based in hereditary factors.
Fair enough.
And that what is happening when you're adding the food situation to it is you're maybe turning it on, but it's not causing it. So
right.
I believe when I got cancer, they said you either got it from bad genes, bad luck, bad environment, or a combination of the three. So I don't feel like if you eat a lot of animal fats that you're just destined to have high cholesterol. I don't think that has anything to do with it. In fact, and I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but I actually think that in my lifetime, we are going to attribute high cholesterol to sugar. Because if you look at the way that the large machine of food productivity and agriculture changed in the 1970s, it was from there that we started to have a lot of these food issues. And that was when we started to genetically modify a lot of foods.
Right.
And we could go on and on about that. But genetic modification of foods has done two things. It's made it so that you can feed more people, which we need to feed the world. That's cool. But it's also changing the dynamics of the way that food reacts within our bodies.
So when an FDA comes in and approves a specific ingredient or gives it their, you know, their thumbs up,
mm-hmm.
Are they considering the long-term effects, or are they just, again, I'm skeptical on like how much is short-term benefit in coming in from, like, you know, we need this money, so we're going to go ahead and improve something.
I think it's good to be skeptical about that for sure in lots of things. Like, I would say medical devices, it's good to be sure. skeptical about that. Treatments of drugs, you know, the opioid epidemic. All of a sudden, we developed this massive, great opioid pain relief, and then the pharmaceutical company dumped it on America in a way that they were like, it's super safe, everybody can do right. it, and now 30% right. of people yeah. are addicted to something or on anti-anxiety or antidepressants. And for some people, those are godsends.
Like, right.
I don't want to judge what you're doing.
Right.
But I think it's ridiculous to say that we're not over-medicated as a society. And food is health medicine. Food
right.
is fuel. Food is something that can make you feel better or make you feel significantly
You're
worse.
Putting it into your body, right?
Right.
And what's weird about food is it doesn't happen overnight. Like, when you read about a lot of these cleanses or these diets, it's 21 to 28 days before you really start to feel better. Most people don't have that kind of patience.
And most right. people don't, you know, again, majority of those diets and all those workout routines, they talk about like 80% of your quote unquote abs are made in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a lifestyle change as opposed to, sure, you can do it for, you know, 21 days or 30 days and you'll see some physical difference. But if you go back to your normal, it's going to go away within 2 days.
You don't get skinny at the gym.
Right. And Stephanie, I think it's interesting when you brought that up, like when you bring up that food might be important to your overall well-being, people kind of, and maybe you find this when you're doing your blog and some of the things that you might write on, they kind of look at you like you just said something, and maybe it's the part of country I come from, they use voodoo, like kind of thing. Like, it's very easy for people to glom onto, yes, you might see some change if you take some sort of medicine or something
yep.
that was from a something like that. But if you go, no, change your diet, or this might be affecting you because you have some sort of food sensitivity, or maybe you shouldn't have so much dairy, then people go, ah, you made that up. And that's, you know, that's
it's
invalid.
Yeah. And I mean, my family thinks I'm a nut. I'm not going to lie. My daughter has had depression and anxiety, and I really 100% believe it's based on your diet, because your brain chemicals are made in your stomach, your serotonin, your gut health. That's starting to be really clearly defined science.
Right.
It's starting to get to food companies, and now they're using all the right words and saying all the right things. But and I'm not here to demonize food companies. Some of them are amazing. And again, they're feeding the world. But you realize that there is a real connection between your gut health and your brain health. And yeah, people think I'm weird and whatever. It's fine. I don't always practice what I preach either. You know, I love to go out to dinner and share a bottle of wine with a person. That's not really great use of my stomach chemicals for my brain.
Right.
You wake up the next morning, you feel a little foggy. Alcohol is a very difficult drug, actually, for your body to process. But, you know, I think it depends on what you're facing. If you're facing a cancer diagnosis, you can clean up your health and make your treatments a lot easier for you by doing the right things medically with your diet.
Right.
If you're having depression, maybe you need to get on antidepressants, but maybe you also want to look at some of the other lifestyle factors, even like vitamins, like how much vitamin D are you getting? Now they're saying that vitamin D doesn't have anything to do with anything. The vitamin D that you get from the sun on your eyes for 20 minutes a day, I don't care what they say. That makes a huge difference in my life and many people's lives.
Right.
But you have to find out what works for you, right?
Yes. And try through this whole thing and just kind of, you know, make it a journey.
And no one's the same. Like what works for, I have a sister that's chemically dependent, and her makeup and her lifestyle and her choices and how she's going to feel good in a day is going to be really different than what mine is. So, you know, just being flexible. But I am a, I'm a seeker. Like, I love to try new things. I every diet that's out there, I've tried. Every, like, magic pill, I've tried. Every kale chip, I've eaten. And then I'll sit and have a pint of ice cream at Izzy's because it just tastes really good, too.
Sure. Well, you got to enjoy life, too.
Well, you said that you're going to get ready over on your Makers, the Makers of Minnesota, and on Stephanie's Dish to kind of do one of those lists. So can you give us a little flash of what
trends?
For
sure. And this was a little bit trendy last year, but even more so will just be protein alternatives.
Okay.
So we were talking about, I podcast this with a guy that called himself a cricket rancher.
Yes, because he knows our friend Tina Rexing. Who
North Star
T-Rex
Crickets.
Cookies.
Mm-hmm. He makes a cricket powder that's full of protein, and she puts it in her chocolate chirp cookies.
Yes.
So protein alternatives and using different animals, insects, and those kind of things, that's becoming more popular. Also, meat replacements. So like looking at making jerky out of fruit or making jerky out of taro root or things like that as a way to get more healthy benefits. Trying to think of what else is going to be popular. Grab-and-go type things are still really popular. Different fruits that we maybe don't normally see here will, I think, come back into play.
Okay.
So things like dragon fruit, passion fruit, different kinds of mangoes, and the weird hybrid fruits. Do you guys ever eat like the pluots and...
I see them, like, I, you know, and I don't know, it's always...
There should be, like a taste center at the, you know, the Whole Foods or Cups. Like,
well, sometimes
this
is
what this tastes like.
Yeah, I'm so like, oh, it's a plum, but it's an apricot, or, you know, or some ratio kind of thing. So, I mean, I'll look them all up, but then I do kind of go, well, who, you know, I guess it depends, you know, for me, I'm like, if it's a Frankenfood or if it's a farmer sat there and figured out how to, like, slowly make these things together. And I always want to know where the idea came from.
Okay, my famous... faux pas on my show that's so embarrassing, but it's still so funny, is I saw this story about the Beniwi.
Okay.
And it was a banana that you peeled and inside it was a kiwi.
Okay.
They had like genetically spliced the banana and the kiwi. And I totally 100% believed it, thought this was the coolest thing ever because I love kiwi, but I hate peeling them. And I like, if you look at a kiwi, you can see it like with a banana with the seeds.
Sure.
And
okay.
So I was like telling my radio partner, Steph March, I was like, Stephanie, have you seen the Beniwi? And I think she thought I was joking, you know, and she was just like looking at me like, oh yeah, you watch the weird Facebook thing about how they splice the banana and the kiwi together. Ha ha. And I was like, well,
they did.
Yeah. And she was just like, Stephanie, They did not. Like, yes, they did.
And I'm going to buy 12.
And I just, and she was, I mean, that is like famous because she just looked at me like she couldn't, she just shook her head. It was like, really? Are you so dumb? But it's not that far-fetched to think that you could.
Right.
There's any food scientists out there, if you can.
A Beniwi would be a big seller.
And we know we already have a target market for it. So if they have anybody,
at least one
person.
That
one.
That's right.
So, Stephanie, remind everybody, you know, if we're going to find you, where do we find you online?
Stephanie's Dish is where you can find most of my stuff. I do a weekly Dish radio show, but it also is a podcast that you can find there. Mm-hmm. And if you subscribe to the podcast, you get different content outside of the radio show that is happening more on the road, which has been really fun. Stephanie and I will go eat places and we'll have a conversation over lunch or breakfast, and we podcast that. And then Makers of Minnesota is also, you can find those podcasts there. I've had 120 shows with different makers in the Twin Cities.
Wow.
It is really fun. I'll be honest, do you ever have like bad shows?
Yeah.
Not bad, but like,
well, you're like, that wasn't my favorite.
I had two shows right in a row where the people were interesting, but I just wasn't gelling and I wasn't asking the right questions. And I got done and I was like, God, maybe I should stop doing this. I feel like I didn't even ask them the right questions and I didn't get any energy out of them and I just felt bad about it. And then the third person walked in the door, sat down, and I talked to her for an hour and I felt like it was 2 minutes.
Wow.
Like she was just so engaged in what she does and excited about it. And just, I just got so much energy from her. I was like, this is what I love. Nice. This is what I do.
And we can find you on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
It's at Makers of MN.
Yes. Okay. And at Stephanie's Dish are my handles. And Stephanie's Dish, you can find me most everywhere.
So here's what I would like to do. Because we do have, it's turned
Watch
into
Game
a,
of Thrones.
No. But,
to get back to the Game of Thrones.
But sorry. It almost is almost there. Here's what I would like to do. I would like to have a Game of Thrones party.
A party.
A Game of Thrones dinner party.
Okay.
That I think would be fun. And I think that Stephanie Hansen, you would be
the perfect
person.
We could record it.
Yes. So let's do a game. Because I did do a little bit of due diligence, and I know that there are some Pinteresty people out there who have done some things. And I think we could do a fantastic Game of Thrones dinner party.
Okay, we can't make it a watch party because I don't want to watch Game of Thrones with any of you.
No,
just need to be alone in my space.
And I don't want to.
I also like to watch Game of Thrones alone.
Yeah, yes. And you don't call me during Game of Thrones. You don't talk to me during Game of Thrones.
Didn't MyTalk 107 do like a marathon thing up in the theater, the Icon Theaters or something?
It was for posers.
Oh, just wanted to make.
I'm just saying.
It doesn't look like the kind of show that you want to have a whole party of people around.
No, you just want to be alone. But I would do a Game of Thrones. I don't know. Like a dinner party would be really fun.
Yeah. But I'm down with that. Okay. Okay. So let's find a place with that and we'll figure it out.
Shannon,
we
can
do it at my house.
You can come, can come with costumes because that's something.
I do have the costumes.
You are a cosplay lady.
Yes. So I can always come with the appropriate attire. I'll do that.
Is a furry considered cosplay?
I don't consider it cosplay. It's a lifestyle.
Okay.
I don't mean to call you out or ask. No, but I think, and I am not a particular furry, but I feel the people that I know within the furry community do not consider it a cosplay or a costume.
Well,
you know?
So I owned a printing company, and one of the guys that works for us was like, hey, I'm involved with this conference, and we're going to do a program. Would you give us a discount on the printing? And I was like, sure. So the graphics files come in, and we produce it, and it's getting assembled in the back. And it had like some staples and things that needed to happen. And one of the guys comes over and he goes, hey, did you see this? And I was like, no, what is that? And I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, it was the program for the furry convention.
Mm-hmm. The one they used to have in Bloomington?
Yes. Yeah. And he was on the board. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Yes. I've never even thought about this before. Huh. And then I pulled him aside and I was his employer. So I was like, I don't mean to be weird. But you asked,
you're curious.
I was like, tell me about this. This is fascinating to me. And I thought like, is it cosplay? Like, I didn't know.
I consider cosplay a whole different genre. So kind of thing. And I do think it's interesting. And we have not thus far tapped into the local furry community, but I am happy to make a couple of phone calls.
Have you talked to cosplay people?
I do. So we talked to them. So we know a lot of those. We actually have some. We're going to take BR Geek on the road a few more times. So in January, you're going to be able to see us at Console Room, which is the local fan-driven Doctor Who convention that's going to be going on. And then then in March, we're going to be at MarsCon, and I know that they have a cosplay component to that as well. And then for sure, by the time we come up to July 2019 and we're going to Convergence 2019, there are plenty of people that'll be at Convergence that'll be of that particular mindset. So.
One other trend, and then I'll wrap it up here because we've talked forever. I'm feeling like there's a trend that's an old trend that's coming back again with the young folks, which is, are you hearing about all these kids playing Dungeons and Dragons again?
And we have friends that never stopped personally. And so I, you know, we can do another couple episodes of that. Like one of a couple of our good friends do that and do that.
A lot of kids apparently are rediscovering it. A lot of junior
Stranger
high.
Things kind of brought it back.
Right.
Yeah. So
and
that's
I
fun.
I am all for everybody getting together over a table and enjoying one another's
board
company.
Games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Board games are big. To come back
unless they're Candyland, in which case you
they're
have
like
to
new
stack
board games. Like there's some we can talk an entire episode about the new board games.
The Chow Crown.
Yeah,
we got that for Thanksgiving. We did it. Do you know what I'm talking? It's like the crown where the forks twirl around,
yep. and you get to eat different foods off of
funny.
It. Yeah, so we have so many things. So Stephanie, we'll definitely have to have you back
thanks.
On.
Yeah, thanks.
It was
great.
It'll be great. So everybody, go to her website. It's stephaniesdish.com. You get all that information. You can also get all of her social media handles and listen to all those episodes. We'll make sure we connect to those. You can always find us. We encourage you to comment, like us. Give us all of your feedback. We've had some people make some great suggestions on who we should have on Be Our Geek. And you can find us by going to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and such. We're at Be Our Geek MN.
Play my favorite theme song.
Oh, I'm going to play it for you. And we encourage everybody to make sure you follow us and see us next time when we return on Be Our Geek.